His dissertation included multiple case study methodology to explore the process of implementing the 10 steps to successful breastfeeding in North Carolina hospitals, and developed a causal inference approach to evaluating the individual effect of each step on breastfeeding duration. Nathan has experience working with health programs in the U.S. as well as in Mongolia and Jordan. I know it's the old one. That's why I remember the system, so you need the new one. Go ahead.
I swear I updated it on time. So no financial disclosures, either me nor my co-authors, and two of my co-authors are here in the room. I won't make you stand. Learning objectives, just to discuss some of the barriers that we heard from healthcare providers regarding reducing pacifier use during the hospital stay, and explain how some of these barriers were overcome. So in the past, when I've given presentations, I tend to speak really loudly. It's my previous life as a preacher. So if I speak too loudly and I'm blowing you out, please let me know, because I hear a ringing. I heard a ringing all day. So if you're hearing a ringing, please let me know. I'm going to introduce just really briefly the topic of pacifiers during the hospital stay, and talk about the Breastfeeding Friendly Healthcare Project, which was presented earlier, so I'll breeze through that just a bit. The methods that we used in our qualitative study, and then discuss some of the barriers that healthcare providers in our hospitals identified, and then the strategies that were used by CGBI to overcome some of these identified barriers. Hospital-based pacifier use is a really charged topic. When I came into the BFHI realm, I didn't realize how charged of a topic it was until I first started doing interviews, and oh my goodness, I was blown over. And we hear stories from hospitals where they got rid of pacifiers and then their breastfeeding rates went down. But then on the same side, we see a lot of large-scale studies that suggest that when you introduce a pacifier during the hospital stay, it really inhibits breastfeeding. And so there's some conflicting ideas out there about that, and all of that goes into this this discussion about pacifier use. And yet we as a community are promoting the implementation of the 10 steps of successful breastfeeding, and step 9 is to limit the use of pacifiers for breastfed infants. And so this is something that hospitals are actively engaged in if they are choosing to pursue baby-friendly designation. The Breastfeeding Friendly Healthcare Project was a translational research project to support several hospitals in North Carolina to implement the 10 steps. And we had hospitals from throughout the state, all the way from the mountains in the west to the plains in the east. We identified a hospital serving low-wealth populations, and we divided them into two phases. Phase one would receive an intervention during the first half of the during the project, and phase two would receive the intervention during the second half. And this is our study design, which you have seen, many of you saw yesterday. So not going to go over that, except to say that we collected data in 2009, 10, and 11, roughly. At each time point, we conducted several key informant interview guides, key informant interviews based on an interview guide, which was comprised of semi-structured, open-ended questions. And amongst other things, they asked the key informants to discuss their attitudes and practices related to each specific step of the 10 steps. So we walked through each of the steps and asked about their providers' attitudes about that step and practices about that step. And so I'll be presenting to you some of the findings that we had when we discussed step 9 with them. We asked them to discuss their barriers that they would expected to have with implementing the step, and things that may help them to implement the step. And then after the intervention, we asked them to discuss some of the strategies that CGBI used that were helpful to overcoming the barriers that were identified during the baseline assessments. We conducted interviews at 3 points in time. We used purposeful sampling to make sure that we were interviewing people who would be responsible for providing maternity care. We did about 5 interviews at each hospital. Sometimes we did 6 or 7. We basically selected until we started hearing the same constructs over and over again. Interviews lasted between 30 minutes these were folks on the job, and sometimes we had to cut the interview short, unfortunately, to an hour and 15 minutes. We digitally recorded all of our interviews. They were transcribed. We developed a code book with codes and decision rules of when to apply each of these codes to make sure that we were being rigorous. And then to make sure that it wasn't just one person's idea, we had multiple people code the interviews. Then we got together, we reviewed the interview code, the codings for the interviews, made sure that they agreed. If there's any disagreement, there's literature about this in the qualitative world, we discussed why they might be divergent and then came to consensus about that. Oh, and we conducted the analyses within the hospital to see what is Hospital 1 saying about this topic, and then we tried to compare different hospitals' experiences. So prior to providing the intervention, something that really came out about Step 9 was the idea that we have to do what moms want. And we asked them to, well, we presented Step 9 to them, and we said, what do you perceive as being the commitment among the healthcare staff for providing, for limiting the provision of pacifiers? And one nurse said, she said, giving no artificial nipple or pacifier, yeah, the opportunity's there, but we don't do it because we have to do what the mom says. I mean, how many times do you get a mom that says no formula, but it can have a pacifier? We're committed to not providing a pacifier. We've just got to do what they tell us. And here's another quote about that. They'll bring their own pacifiers, and we leave it up to their discretion about what they want to do. Painful procedures. The idea that you have to use a pacifier during a painful procedure. Healthcare providers in the across all of our hospitals would talk about the fact that they would put sucrose water on the pacifier to during painful procedures such as circumcisions, and we have to use this in order to soothe them. This one person was talking about that. She was a little, I remember this interview, she was a little bit hostile towards the idea of pacifier use, and she said, well, we have a policy that says we have to use a pacifier with sucrose during circumcision, so how can we do Step 9 when our policy is going against that? And a physician that we interviewed said, well, sometimes they're going to be crying during this procedure, and sometimes you just want to listen to the heart, and you can't get them to stop crying unless you put something in their mouth. And then the last one, we heard this in an earlier presentation about personal experiences influencing a healthcare provider's support for breastfeeding. And this nurse was talking about her experience as a nurse, and she says, just give the baby a patsy. I don't think it interferes with breastfeeding whatsoever. I've done this for over 20, I've been 25, 26 years, and it, in my opinion, in my experience, it does not hinder breastfeeding. A pacifier does not. You give them formula, you give them bottles, yes, but a pacifier don't. But on the flip side, it was also based on their experiences as a parent. One physician said, I have two children. They had pacifiers. They breastfed for months. They never had problems with breastfeeding. So why should I think that the nipple, that the pacifier is a bad thing? And so we have personal experiences both as a healthcare provider but also as a parent that is influencing their thoughts and perceptions about Step 9, which is limiting pacifier use. So based on our baseline assessments, we collaborated with the task force at each hospital to develop a policy, and these policies addressed, amongst other things, pacifier use. Our trainer and our lead educator on our project developed, in consultation with the director of the project, training on the risks of pacifier use. We presented them the evidence. We trained them, gave them scripts on how to counsel moms about avoiding and delaying the artificial nipple use. We trained staff how to counsel moms for other soothing methods. And we spoke with the different task force. Well, what will work in your hospital, in your context, to restrict access to pacifier use? So after implementing these strategies, these trainings, the collaborations, one thing that came out was that the training helped to get everybody on the same page, specifically with regard to pacifier use. You know, it's hard to educate a mom and to tell her, you know, it, referring to pacifiers, is not a good idea. And then the next person says, oh, here, sure. And that makes one nurse look really good. Imagine which one. And one nurse look really bad. So the training helped us give us all strategies and get us all onto the same page. Another approach that was used was policies. I'm going to present to you two different types of policies. One hospital decided that they were going to strictly ban all pacifiers from the hospital floor. No pacifiers at all, whatsoever. When we went in and we interviewed the staff about that, they said management informed us that it's a policy and you will follow policy and procedure, or I mean, it's just like any other policy. It'll be your job on the line. You don't want to know the cuss words we said. You know we weren't happy about it. There was some serious backlash to the policy of pacifiers are gone. And we heard it from every single person that we spoke to at that hospital. Another hospital decided to implement a policy that would document that nurses provided an education to moms about pacifier use, and then rather than eliminating them, restrict access to them by storing them in the Pyxis. And I heard this in a presentation earlier today as well. And one of the nurses responded saying, you know, I think it's something as simple as they're there. They're in the Pyxis. There's five of them. Yeah, you've got to sign them out, but they're there. And so restricting the use, but letting folks know, yes, in an emergency, they're still there. We haven't unilaterally removed them, helped give nurses a little bit more confidence about moving forward on step 9. And finally, collaboration. Something that we incorporated into the project was having all of the hospitals share their experiences, what worked, what didn't work, not only on on phone calls, we all got together in person, but also on ongoing webinars. One nurse talking about the website. The website, the portal that we can go into and we can get information from other hospitals. I have a listserv with a lot of other hospitals that are doing the same projects. And also helping the nurses to know that they aren't the only ones in the state of North Carolina that are working on this. And it gave them confidence to know, hey, we're not forging this on our own. There's other folks on this with us. So pacifiers was a really charged topic among the healthcare providers. Literally the first interview I did 3-4 years ago, like it came up and I was blown out of my chair by it. And there were several barriers to it, but the three that emerged most saliently were, we have to do it a mom once. From my personal experience as a provider and as a mom, I know that pacifier use does not interfere with breastfeeding, and we need it for painful procedures. And that developing targeting and training that gets everyone on the same page, and it seemed, at least from our study, that policies that restricted access without completely eliminating access helped to move some of the more resistant healthcare providers along towards providing step 9, and collaboration, gaining the experience from other hospitals was a really key aspect identified. This was funded by several funding organizations, and I want to also thank the task forces and the CGVI staff. Diane Asbell and Brooke Colgan were both the trainers that trained our healthcare providers, and Dorothea Calhoun Smith was our administrative assistant. Thanks.
Yeah, we got 1 minute, 2 questions. Anne and
yeah. So I'm confused because you're talking about compliance at step 9, mm-hmm. but they don't say that you have to not use them for painful procedures.
Yeah.
So any policy that says they have to be eliminated from the hospital is wrong. I mean, so I'm kind of confused why you even use that as a measure of people's resistance at step 9, because actually they're able to be used for painful procedures and over certain circumstances.
People can bring them in, and when the nurses I said that in those interviews, we said, okay, it is okay for painful procedures, but this was the perception of a barrier that the nurses identified prior to implementing the 10 steps, that we won't be able to practice step 10 because we have to use this for these situations. And also one of the hospital's responses to just completely ban them from the floor, I would argue, and Emily would be able to speak a little bit better to this because she worked more directly with them, that wasn't something that we specifically counseled them to do or gave them advice to do. That was this person, that hospital,
so really
becoming.
To misinformation.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Thank you.
Wait, there's a question.
We have a situation
that
was dealing with him.
I'm sorry, I can't. I'm having trouble hearing you, actually.
The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends sleeping on the back with a pacifier.
Chapter 16.
Yeah, but that's not during the hospital stay. That's after three weeks, 6 weeks. Yeah, typically a baby's out of the hospital before the baby's 2.5 days old. That statement goes into effect well after the hospital stay. But you're right, there's also misinformation about that, and we heard that also in the interviews, which comes back to Anne's point about misinformation. I appreciate that.
Yeah,